Woohoo! Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday!
It's Tuesday!
And we're coming to you live from Chamonix. I'm just like over here in Chamonix, swirling in all the inspiration. It's amazing.
Yeah, so much inspiration. I actually have over-inspiration syndrome right now.
I agree. I kind of feel like we took a bath and like fun dip, and there was just like all these packets of goodness and sugar in there. And now we're just like sticky and on a sugar crash. But you know what? I feel like we just got to keep it going for a few more days.
Lots of really fun things in life end up with you being really sticky afterwards.
That's apparently a good point. I actually literally am sticky. I feel like our life is just like, we need to go home and get like a really, really hot shower.
Yeah, a really hot shower, just fully disinfect our brains, because we are just full of the most love and joy ever from the UTMB races this week. We are flying high. Our brains are flying a little bit low. So this podcast is going to be a mix of interesting energy. I think on one end, we're going to be kind of delirious. On the other end, we're going to be stoked. On the other end, we're going to be extremely sleep deprived. So let's see what happens.
Okay, believe in our brains, buddy.
Oh, I do. I just think it's going to be interesting.
We're just injecting straight fun dip into our brains at this point. We're keeping it going. All we need is another 90 minutes and then we're good.
Yeah, no, and we're just going to get better and better as it goes along, as that sleep deprivation works its way through. Spectating those races, Megan, was one of the coolest things I've ever experienced.
It was so incredible. I'm actually over here kind of speechless about it, because it was like from the very front runners, Courtney and Jim, all the way to the back of the pack. I was tearing up almost with every finisher. It got to the point I was like, am I just dehydrating my body from all these tears coming out of me? It was pretty wild.
Yeah, and maybe that's the best place to start. I was having this reflection last night about a lot of what we talked about today is going to be focused on the elite athletes in the race that are right at the front of the pack. But we also want to focus on the elite athletes that are at the back of the pack, or even having the courage to run at all. Because what I was thinking about as we were walking to dinner, everything in France requires a little bit of a walk. It's totally different than where we are. Is that anyone who starts out on a running journey is taking this like leap of courageous faith. And what made me think about that is someone who goes out on their first run, especially the people that start as adults. And I can't imagine the amount of self-consciousness that goes into that and a little bit of fear. And then every step of the running journey takes that leap of courage higher and higher, where you're failing on progressively bigger and bigger stages, and then you keep going. And that's what's so cool about being out there, is not that, you know, people win only. It's that every single person that was on that course, every single person that starts the running journey at all, is essentially united by this shared communal courage. And I think you feel it when you're out there. It just like lifts you up to the moon. And it gives me so much like motivation to do a bunch of different things in life.
And it's not just like the giant loops that happened this weekend in the form of a 106-mile loop around UTMB. It's like the adult onset form of running to me.
Yeah.
Like how hard it is to even start running, especially as an adult. Like for us, I feel like because we played so many sports, we were doing wind sprints, we got into running at like a younger age. Some of that really like hard some of those really hard moments of like starting out with running kind of wash away with us.
I don't know, Megan. It was so hard. Yeah. Running is impossible.
It is impossible.
That's why like the 106 miles around Mont Blanc, I'm like, what the fuck? How is that possible? Especially after seeing some of these trails. I'm like, okay, as a coach, you know, we've had athletes excel here. It was a great year for us in coaching. But I just don't know how people do it.
And I feel like that's the sort of thing that you don't necessarily get from the live stream.
Yeah.
Like, I think sometimes from watching the live stream, you're like, oh my God. Like, there's almost this, like, surreal inspiration. But sometimes I feel like it doesn't capture just truly how hard it is. And I actually put a text message from one of my athletes in the podcast outline later, because it's like, I think it was wild to see people finish.
Yeah.
And the amount of courage and grit and like belief that it took, but also their words of like, holy fuck, why did I do that? That was impossible. That was so hard. That was like a pain cave literally for three quarters of it. And I feel like it's interesting to have this level of like inspiration and belief layered right alongside. And it almost feels like, to me, it's, I'm excited, but I'm also a little daunted at the same time. How do you feel? Because you're heading into Grindstone 100K in about 2.5 weeks now, and you just saw people take these journeys through the pain cave. Does that make you like excited or daunted or both?
It makes me so excited to occupy the pain cave, make it a little bit bigger, turn on some lights, turn on some funky music, and just get a groove going in the pain cave. You know, seeing it in person, it really does draw home that like when I talked about courage, a lot of that is because you're stepping up, and every time you do these types of sports, you're accepting that you're going to be occupying this space of discomfort as the goal.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to get to in the next couple of weeks is that that is the goal, not an unfortunate byproduct. Because if it's not the goal, you shouldn't do this stuff. And I think we saw that on the course, that the people that were ready for that, that wanted to live in that space, really excelled, especially when it got so hard out there, which is most of the races. So I'm really ready to get the pain cave getting funky.
And I feel like for the pain cave, you have to go in with that like internal based why. And sure, there can be some external based things in there. But I think if that internal based why is not solid and at a really strong foundation, it's hard to keep going. And I feel like the biggest advice I gave to my athletes before the race is this race is for you.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's getting at the idea of like, you need an internal based why to sit in that pain cave and sit there and get comfy with the funky music.
Yeah. And I mean, that's running in general. And so that's what we're going to try to bring to you throughout this episode, is a view from the ground of what it's like here. And hopefully, even if you don't care about these races, you'll have analogies in your life about big, hard things that take years of work to get to. Because in experiencing it, I think our minds were opened a lot, not just with running, but the type of grind that podcasting takes, that work takes, that being a parent takes. All of that is represented in the metaphor of these types of races. On the big stage where failure is almost inevitable, and if you do it long enough. So I'm excited to dig down into some of the nitty-gritty details, Megan.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought that out, too, because athletes that have gone through the pain cave at UTMB, I'm like, think about what that does pain caves. Well, yeah, exactly. You're powering yourself with, like, that sweet fun-dip motivation for, like, the rest of life.
You think an Excel sheet is hard after being on that fucking course? No. Excel sheet's easy. Parenting, easy. Basically, any struggle in life, I mean, not easy, but you can get comfortable in the pain caves of those little things. So I'm really excited. But I first wanted to mention myself putting you through a pain cave right before the madness truly began.
Oh, man, it was rough.
It was rough.
Do you want to share? You can expand on that a little bit.
Okay, so for everyone, first, a roadmap of generally what we're going to do. We're going to talk a little bit about some of our experiences, talk about some France hot takes, then get into the races, race week thoughts, narratives. But our main goal is to give you a lot of fun in this journey. And so we're going to start on that fun journey by telling you about something that was not fun at all for me, which is on Thursday, the day of OCC. You know, I had a run, felt solid.
Actually, you had a great run.
I had a great run. Granted, I was a little cold on the run, even though it was warm, which was strange. I was like, I must be really heat acclimated. This is awesome for grindstone. The hot tub has really paid off. I was really giving myself a pat on the back. And then I'm standing out there at the finish line, and I start to just feel not so great. And I'm like, okay, this makes sense. I get so stressed when athletes are racing. Our athlete Nick Handel was out there, had a breakthrough race for 11th. At OCC, second American. It was so awesome. He crushed it. And I'm just like, wow, what a sign of how much I care as a coach that it affects my body this much. So I'm talking to Nick after the finish and just telling him how much I love him and all that. And he's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And I'm like, Nick, I'm about to pass out. Can we sit down? And I thought it was pretty funny that a guy that just crushed 34 miles and 11,000 feet vert, I'm telling I need to sit down after doing nothing. Blah, blah, blah. What ends up happening is I'm talking to Drew Holman, our athlete who's going to race CCC the next day. And as we leave his hotel, I'm like, Drew, I'm so sorry. Pull off to the side and evacuate the contents of my stomach onto the side of his hotel while Drew is there right before his race. This is my ultimate nightmare in life. And Drew comes over in classic Drew fashion and rubs my back and says, it's going to be okay, Davis.
Like, you must have been horrified. Like, oh, get away from me. You're racing.
Yeah. I was like, Drew, don't touch me. Get away. I can't imagine what bystanders thought of that. But in what it turns out is that I had some pretty nasty stomach thing, probably food poisoning. We're not sure. A lot is growing around Chamonix. We're going to talk about this in the narrative section of the race. But that night, you didn't sleep much. I didn't sleep at all. That was going right into CCC, which was a full day spectating experience, and then UTMB. So I think I gave you like maybe 2 hours of sleep over the course of 2 days there.
Okay, it was a little rough from a sleep perspective, but I just felt so bad for you. Like, you know when your partner is going through that and you just feel powerless to help, but you were actually hilarious as you were like deep in the depths of the pain cave in the trenches before the race. I was getting these text messages from you that were so funny. So before this all happened, you sent me a text message and you're like, Megan, I think I have food poisoning from a croissant. And I'm like, David, you don't get food poisoining from croissants. It's like almost entirely impossible.
I'm pretty sure French don't use preservatives. that's actually one of my thoughts about France. And I'm actually going to move up one of my hot takes. Everything feels like it's less likely to give you cancer, but more likely to give you food poisoning. Like, it's like, I want all my food to be like, you know, normal, but then put under a nuclear reactor before I eat it, which is, I feel like, what happens in America. Here, things just are what they are, which for my delicate American stomach did not seem to work.
Well, I feel like you have a delicate American stomach, but you also like consume the amount of an American stomach, because also before this happened too, you were just straight guzzling milk out of our refrigerator. And you're like, I've never felt this good about dairy and it's unpasteurized milk. And then like 45 minutes later, this happened.
Yeah. In the United States, it's Gatorade. Here, it's straight whole milk right after my run. Maybe I made some mistakes along this journey.
Okay, so the other thing that happened is it was like midnight. You were getting sick like all night long. It was a very long
affair. Which has never happened to me. I've never done that before.
Oh my God, my heart. I just felt so bad for you. And it was rough. But as this was happening, I get this text message from you. And I was like, oh, he probably wants Powerade or water or medication or something. And it was just a journal article on hemoglobin mass. And I was like, why are you sending me journal articles on hemoglobin mass as you're deep in the trenches?
Megan, the science news alerts never stop. I can't miss a day or we might miss some sweet podcast content.
As I was preparing for this podcast, I went back through to see the journal articles. I was like, maybe there's some sexy science we want to include in here. And literally, like, as you were deep in this for 24 hours, I got 6 journal articles. Never stop learning. Never stop vomiting. Never stop learning. Sometimes at the same time.
Okay, that needs to be a shirt. Never stop vomiting. Never stop learning. Okay, so we went into it with that context. And what got me out of it was the love and inspiration from the course. So our personal experiences out there were we tried to get to random places in the woods to see the races go through. So we were able to choose places that the racers would never expect anyone, but were pivotal locations on the course, usually after long downhills, going into an uphill, long before an aid station. So the places where you could actually connect with athletes and see their experiences. So I think we got a wonderful window into the sport at this level throughout the pack, because you know, we truly got to connect in a time when athletes would just be randomly on the course. It was one of the cooler experiences of my life, and getting to actually see all these athletes, not just the ones we coach, but everybody, and tell them how much we care about them and how proud of them we are.
This is what I live for at races. Like, heck with racing myself, I just love going there and like yelling woohoo and huzzah out there, because it brings me so much joy. But I think we need to back up, because how we got to these different places. So we have 2 podcast listeners, Ricardo and Charlie.
Oh
and
my God,
we
the best
teamed
people.
Up with them here in Chamonix, and they helped take us around to different parts of the course. Charlie had a VW bus. So it was Leo's first like camper bus experience, and he truly loved it. But what I thought was hilarious was the first part of, you know, teaming up with them, you were still recovering from your stomach experience, and
there are windy roads.
Yes, windy roads, and you were just a zombie in the car. Yeah. And I actually felt a little bad, because it's like sometimes, you know, we hadn't met them before, they've listened to our podcast, and I was like, oh my God, they're gonna think we're like so fake. You're just sitting there, like, you literally didn't talk for about 2 hours of the first
part
of the drive.
My head was in my hands.
You looked
like
so miserable.
Yeah, just like so pale, like basically translucent. You could see right through me, and you know, Ricardo's telling us these amazing stories, and Charlie's sharing all this love, and I'm just like, and part of my brain was just thinking, nothing is good right now, everyone be quiet.
Because when I first met you, I was kind of, I mean, I was frankly surprised and overwhelmed by like your positivity, but then you just kept doing it.
Yeah.
And it became contagious, and that kind of became my way of life. And I'm so grateful for it, but they had the opposite experience. And I felt so bad, but then you perked up. It was great. You came alive.
Everyone says like the real you comes out when you have like 2 drinks or something. Yeah. I hope the real you doesn't come out when you've had food poisoning, because I don't want that to be the real me. That guy was not particularly nice.
No, you were doing the best you can.
But I was doing the best, and I got better as the day went on.
Oh, well, I feel like you got inspired. So what we did is we went to Switzerland, and we found this beautiful
Frey in Switzerland.
Gorgeous. Yeah. We like hiked up this really steep part of the course. We realized that we probably shouldn't be cheering on this part of the course, because it was like a 25% descent.
Yes.
And my fear was if we were yelling woohoo and huzzah, especially at our runners, that they might look up and faceplant. And that would be like I feel like our biggest thing with coaching is do no harm.
Yeah.
And I was like, we need to find a flatter, easier part of the course to spectate. So I think what we've learned is actually the best places on the course to spectate is a downhill into an up.
Yeah.
So you get to see athletes for a period of time, but then you really get to like interact with them and look into their eyes and tell them they're amazing, like on that uphill part. And I feel like finding that key part of the course is integral for coaching, for spectating. Yeah. And if you're out there yourself, like be conscious of that. Cause I feel like for us, it really made a difference.
Yeah. And getting to connect with the people out there was just like so life defining. I mean, what was coolest, I think, partially, aside from the normal, like getting to say, love you to our athletes, how many podcast listeners were in the top 20 of these races?
It was kind of wild. Yeah. Especially the men. I felt like after like the 2 leaders came through, almost everyone was like, woohoo, huzzah, or like, I believe. And it made me kind of excited. Maybe our science does work.
Granted, there was one guy, I think it's Mike, out there who's crushing his race and saw us, said, David and Megan Roach and Leo, huzzah, and then sprains his ankle so bad.
And I felt him so hard. That's exactly, I mean, it was totally non-technical. Yeah. We particularly picked this because I was like, if our woohoos lead to ankle sprains, I'm going to hate myself. And so, yeah, I felt very bad about that.
But truly, that brings these superhumans to our level. I'm like, that is me. I feel that. It would kind of be like, I don't know, Taylor Swift twisting an ankle during her concert. I was like, okay, I really look up to you, but now I feel like we identify a lot more with each other.
But this is my favorite part of coaching, is going out on the course and giving, I mean, I feel like when each runner comes by, we put a lot of energy into it. Like big woohoos, big huzzas, especially our athletes. And I thought it was really funny because we were posting some of these stories after of our athletes coming through and crushing it. And Kate Courtney, the world champion mountain biker, sent me a message and was like, Megan, I just need someone out there to tell me I'm amazing and preferably incredible. And I got really inspired. I was like, Kate, I'll be your full-time hype woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would travel around with Kate Courtney just to yell and scream at her and bring that energy. And it would be my dream job.
Yeah. Well, I love that someone seeing a video of us on race course that's a world champion in mountain biking is saying that's what they need.
She's like, give me some of this. Yeah. I would follow Kate around. That's like everything, all my education, all my training is to be Kate Courtney's hype woman.
Yeah. Basically, we're having like cheering verbal orgasms out there when people pass.
And maybe that's what made you feel better because you came alive. You came alive after that. And I felt like it was just seeing what those athletes were doing out there that like reinforced the strength of your bowels.
Perhaps. I don't know exactly what it was, but I did survive. Okay. So do you want to I think we skip hot takes, get back to that later because we're talking about the race now. We should just get into the narratives.
And let's do it.
Come back to the hot takes later. So if you want our hot takes on European travel, France, the European experience, stick around to the end because I think people are really going to love these.
Well, I think we might have them for a long time because I'm pretty convinced I want to move to Chamonix.
Yes.
At this point. Actually, I'm excited. We're going home tomorrow and I'm actually very excited to go home, but there's something magical about this place.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have enough UTMB inspiration to power me until we move here.
Yeah.
Which is maybe next year.
I'll probably have evacuated my bowels so many times by then that like I'll be a different human, but maybe that means that I'll be more French.
We'll have to label the next 100 episodes we do live from Chamonix.
Yeah.
Actually,
I love that idea.
That's what we did for our last label of our podcast episode. And we lost the episode for about 90 minutes. And it was horrifying thinking about the fact that we're going to have to record this episode again at like 9 p.m. at night.
Well, it's so fun to get to have this date with you, but we haven't had childcare, which has been another big thing. So Leo, baby Leo, has been with us on this journey throughout, really getting his clapping game on.
Oh, his applauso.
Yeah.
Which I think is the French-Italian word for applause, is next level.
Honestly, it sounds kind of racist when you just say applauso.
it's my favorite word.
This is a podcasto. Is that what we're saying?
Okay, do you prefer alle? So alle is like, let's go,
and
applauso. And I'm just feeling those words.
So here, what they yell is alle, alle, alle.
I think it's Italian, actually.
Oh, is it?
I don't know.
Oh, it's something.
Yeah. All my languages, I've studied a little bit of Italian and Spanish, and now I'm here in France, and it all blends together. I just add Z's and O's and S's and A's.
Such dumb Americans right now.
People already know that. People get that.
people truly get that. But like, I like alle a little bit, but I think we need some even better exclamations in French. Like, we need to bring those once we become true French residents.
Well, actually, the great thing is woohoo and huzzah are both universal terms.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm really glad we chose those because I felt like, I mean, we said that probably 2,000 times. That's not an exaggeration this weekend. And I felt like across all the languages, everyone bought in.
Yeah, it was so cool. So to ground you in why we're thinking about moving to Chamonix, it's an absolute cathedral. Everywhere you look along this course, there are massive mountains on every side of you. As a spectator, as a hiker, it can be quite exciting. As a racer, it can be quite daunting.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like that magic is probably great for the first 10 miles.
Yeah.
And then it starts, I don't know, I wouldn't say that it loses its splendor, but it becomes a daunting splendor.
Yeah, daunting splendor is a great way to put it. The trails themselves are often quite steep, which isn't necessarily the hardest part. I think some of the hardest part, particularly for American athletes, is that the steep trails here can be very non-technical at times. So there are places like where we were going to spectate where it is a smooth ramp of trail down 25% grade.
I was going to say ramp makes me think of like a graded 5%. I don't think this is called, I think this is called a drop off, a cliff. Yeah. Yes. A runnable cliff.
A roller coaster.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, like, exactly.
And the amount of eccentric muscle contractions those can cause can rip athletes to shreds very quickly. Similar in the ups in that the mechanical strain of those types of trails without the the things to slow you down that you have in the US, which usually are altitude or rocks or things like that at times, can make this especially difficult. So there are very technical trails here, but I don't think that's why it's hard. I think it's especially hard because the vert comes so quickly and it can totally rip your body to shreds if you're not prepared for it.
Yeah, those eccentric muscle contractions and like repeat, repeat, repeat. The number of up, down, descents and climbs in both, well, actually across OCC, CCC and UTMB is wild. But there is also that mix of technical running too.
Definitely.
And I heard a lot of the US athletes comment like, it's a different type of technicality too than we see in the US in many places, except maybe the Beast Coast.
Yeah.
But the Beast Coast doesn't have this type of like steep descent type of roller coaster drop-offs here. And I feel like it's just, it's really hard to find this specific combination in the US, but it didn't deter the US athletes.
Well, Zach Miller from Pennsylvania, finishing second at UTMB and one of the fastest times ever, makes a lot of sense to me. This reminds me very similar of a race like the Heiner 25K or 50K, which Zach has done and done very well at in Pennsylvania. A lot of these trails are very similar to that, where you'll get big boulders mixed with really runnable sections. So to our Beast Coast, East Coast athletes out there, you have a location that you can go to, and it is Chamonix. It is really, really good, I think, for athletes from there. And I think it's interesting for US-based people. I think sometimes the training camps that people take are to Silverton in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it should be to, bumfuck Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right?
Some random place in Vermont where they play Deliverance music. That's the best place to train for this race.
Run those rocks and roots. Granted, my hot take is I feel like Zach Miller could be from Kansas.
Yeah.
And he would excel here at UTMB. That man, I feel like he has trail running and racing in his soul.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to remove that from him. And I think, sure, the Beast Coast trails play a role in that. But I think Zach Miller would be Zach Miller in literally any state, any country, any province.
Yeah. So let's get to a few race week thoughts before getting to some of those big narratives, including the US athletes. First is that stomach bugs were everywhere. Not sure exactly what I had, but we heard about so many athletes who suffered from stomach issues before the race, like Ruth Croft and Danny Moreno, who had to drop out of OCC after podiuming last year. So it's another consideration with international travel. It can be quite difficult to balance the new exciting place and the fact that your GI system is exposed to a lot of new and exciting things as well.
Especially Chamonix, because I feel like it's chaos here in the best of ways, but it's also chaos in terms of like the intermingling of germs and
there's a lot of fluids going around.
Yeah, everyone getting sticky with each other.
Yeah.
We're here, we're feeling that like post-race stickiness, but it also happens pre-race too. And I feel like that's really hard. That being said though, I feel like ultra running itself feels like a GI bug.
Yeah.
And so I feel like when people when it feels like there's stomach issues across the board, probably only 50, probably even less than that, probably like 25% of that is some like infectious, contagious reason, especially if it happens pre-race. But I feel like a lot of what happens at mile 60 is not a stomach bug, but just the fact that ultra running is kind of a stomach bug.
We'll never know. It's a convenient excuse either.
Exactly.
Way.
Yeah.
And what you just said reminded me of Will Smith getting sticky with it. Na, 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 na.
That's good.
It was good. Thank you. I feel like I really hit a good, maybe the key is just to be sleep deprived and not give a fuck anymore. So stomach bugs everywhere. Two, there is a massive hype in town. So Chamonix is not that big. It's kind of similar to any ski town, I would say, in the US. But downtown is full of little shops and shoe stores and things like that. It is packed all week long. And it's super cool because like early in the week, you get to see TDS finishers coming through, having seen like a million ghosts in their lives flash before their eyes. But then too, it can be a little exhausting for racers, for spectators and everything, because unless you're off the beaten path, you're constantly exposed to stimulation and new sights and new sounds. And after a while, she's like, okay, I need to be in a dark room and chill.
Yeah. And I feel like it's really important to think about that pre-race. For me, it was so much. Okay. The amount of adventure paraphernalia they sell here in Chamonix is wild. Like literally every single big clothing brand, every single big shoe brand has a store here. And there is just so much adventure gear. Actually, when you were sick and I was like entertaining Leo, and I was actually going through it a little bit too in the moment, because I was seeing our UTMB week flash before my eyes when we're all sick and a lot was going on. I did a little retail therapy, bought a hat. It was a great way to just decompress before coming back home to take care of you. But I feel like in this like adventure paraphernalia, in this downtown Chamonix, it's a lot. And I think for athletes that are racing here, like exposing yourself to small amounts of that to get the hype is helpful, but man, like stay a little bit outside of town. And that applies, I feel like that applies to a lot of races too, like Western states being right there in the village, sometimes is very overwhelming. And I think it's nice to like see that, feel the hype, really soak it in, but have that escape and chance to decompress.
I love the retail therapy idea.
That's right? So good. I bought yellow, my favorite color.
Uh-huh.
Bought a sweet yellow hat. And I was like, this is the vibes I need right now to go back home and handle the situation and be the best person I can be.
I like it. I feel like if we were in the 1300s and the Black Plague was going around, our house would be one of those with a red X on the door after I got sick. And you'd just be like, I'm going to go out and buy myself a yellow smock whatever they did.
It's going to look so great. And I'm going to come back home and Clorox everything.
Yes. And then you start getting the boils and it goes, but you haven't gotten sick yet. So that's a really good sign.
Yeah. Knock on wood. Maybe it's just waiting for me for the plane ride home.
No. I think it was just my chugging of the milk that I wasn't ready for. And it was that part of being in the village was really interesting to reflect on the sport and the growth of the sport in general and UTMB, the race organization. So, you know, I think there's a lot of mixed feelings that people have about the consolidation of the sport into this UTMB brand. On one hand, it's a business success story for sure, that this race that didn't start until 2003, I believe, has come in and figured out a way to brand themselves, market themselves, to create a funnel into this event that has swallowed up so much of the sport and so much of the money in the sport. So a few weeks ago, we talked about Dacia, a car company based in Europe, giving title sponsorship to this race. We don't know the terms of that deal, but I assume we're looking at good 8 figures.
What would be your estimate? Just put a number on it.
40 mil.
I was going to guess 50 mil. So
something like that.
Yeah. Which is wild to think about, that what we're doing of just like a giant loop around Mont Blanc is the equivalent of a $50 million title sponsorship.
And it's just the tip of the money iceberg here, as wild as that seems, because, you know, every little bit has weighs in, whether it's the shoe companies, the apparel, the coaching, the travel, everything else into all the UTMB races. Like Grindstone that I'm doing is Grindstone by UTMB. And so I think on a business end, very interesting, probably we'll have case studies written about what they're doing. I think maybe some of the downside that people might say is that this consolidation is basically like a monopolization of power that could lead to fewer checks and balances, and not only drowning out the smaller players, but then creating less incentive to improve. So I think that that downside is not something I particularly felt this week, but I do think it's a concern when you have this much consolidation.
And I get it and I understand. And I think it's not at the point right now that I would consider to be a monopoly. Like we don't have like the Labor Day barbecue 5K by UTMB quite yet.
Yet.
But seriously, I do worry about that progression. But I think on the whole, like my takeaway is like, I think we need to keep a close eye on it. But being here and seeing this and just the amount of like excitement and belief it's generated for the sport, I think in terms of like the seesaw of where I see it is a net positive at this point. But I think it's something that needs to be closely monitored.
Well, I actually have a fun announcement for you, but I wanted to surprise you with.
Oh my gosh.
Is that okay?
Inspired? Are you pregnant?
We're pregnant with money because inspired by UTMB, we have our first title sponsor.
Who?
ExxonMobil.
Oh, yeah.
Are you excited for that?
I'm very, very excited. Are they going to pay us 60 mil?
Oh, at least. And it was between them and, you know,
Chevron.
People that create shirts that just chafe your nipples. We're just debating. Whoever gives us the most money, we're going to sign up with. No, I mean, I agree with you. I think that it's positive. I think that the financial element of it is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, like the business success story of UTMB is a rising tide right now that is raising all ships across the board. The key is understanding that, embracing that, and figuring out how to tap into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a reason we're here right now, is to support our athletes, but also understanding that the sport has shifted, that if you don't also shift with it to the point that like we're focused now on, you know, being at international races a lot more, and accepting and fully embracing that, like the little things, the little community type things that might have driven it in the past, like the ground up model has now been swallowed up by the top down model. I think that, you know, that's where the opportunities lie for anyone that wants to create a living in this space, whether it's coaching or something else.
And shoe companies, my gosh. I feel like in town, it's like this competitive Hunger Games between shoe companies to see who can do the coolest stuff. Yeah. So we were driving through the town of Valenciennes. It's one of the spots that we spectated on course. It's about, I would say, like 30 minutes outside of Chamonix. And when you drive into the town, it's a very small, like relaxed type of town. There's just this Hummer, this giant black Hummer that kind of looks like a foreboding tank.
Yeah.
And it has Adidas Terex on the side as you're driving. And I'm sure just for UTMB. And the displays of like shoe company like dominance and internal fighting is pretty wild here.
Yeah. It was very interesting. What shoe company do you think
was winning?
Won.
Honestly, Adidas did. I was very impressed because I think I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but I think maybe Salomon, but I think Adidas to me had a very loud presence in the village. It's also curious to me too. So there's Chamonix and then like 10K, 9K down the road is Les Jouches. That's what I was calling Les Hooches on the last podcast. Yes. I have since escalated my French. And some companies stay in Chamonix and then some of, I feel like sometimes companies stay
with a little less money.
Stay in Les Jouches. And it's kind of interesting to see how like the separation of like money and power.
Yeah. Yeah. The haves and the have nots.
Yeah.
Or the people that are, you know, checking the box and the people that are truly investing a fuck ton of money.
Yeah. What was your impression of who won?
Hoka, like,
definitely. Oh, actually, fuck. Yeah. Well, Hoka definitely. I think.
The problem is the Hoka dominates so much.
But the thing is, I think I wasn't surprised by Hoka. Like the entire village is Hoka built. Obviously, like they used to be the title sponsor of the race. But I think to me, Adidas really stepped up.
Yeah. I think Hoka, again, whoever their marketing people are, if you're out there listening, give yourselves a pat on the back. Ask for a 50%
raise. Yeah, right?
It is wild how good they have done in Europe here. They are just fully dominant. And then Adidas, for sure. Like, they stepped in. I'm really curious about their shoes now. And I found that curiosity came from the marketing, most likely, because otherwise I would have no reason to feel that way. Because I haven't loved their trail shoes I've tried in the past. It's like, it's pretty damn cool.
Well, a lot of companies did shoe releases here.
Yeah.
And Adidas was one of those. And you would walk around town and there'd just be lines of people, like 400 people deep. And they'd be waiting there for hours. And it was kind of a cool reflection. I think to me that was really when I was like, trail running has come a long way.
This sport is growing so much. We are at the start of the wave. And I don't know where this ends. Like, I think there's a future 20 years from now where trail running is one of the biggest sports in the world.
Oh, I agree. Well, actually, what made me think about that was the fact that, so when you're here, like, we're obviously obsessed with trail running. We're so in it. But being out there on the UTMB course, French people who were not trail runners and we talked to and like they really didn't know much about running were out there cheering.
Like
and
I
feel
like,
yeah. And I feel like trail running really captivates the mind and like the imagination in a way that I think will become more popular as people start to realize what athletes are doing out there, even if they're not trail runners.
And UTMB is instrumental to that.
Yeah.
Because the visibility of it, because of the money, honestly, has created more availability so that everyone can do it and find their joy in it, whether they're going out for a half mile or 106 miles around Mont Blanc. So I think all in all, net positive.
I agree. Except I do think it might be hard on athletes because, so Courtney, we're going to get into her. I as always just get so excited to talk about Courtney. I love her so much, but she's being followed around the entire race by cameras. And I think I have mixed feelings about that because one, I think it does help elevate the sport. I think she's an icon and a legend to so many young women out there that are going to come into the sport and be the next Courtney's. And I'm getting goosebumps right here, sitting here thinking about that. But also, how hard is it to be followed around for 106 miles by a camera? Like, I feel like for me, ultra running is this very personal solo experience in the mountains. And I mean, think about Courtney, like I'm sure she had to poop at some point out there and you're on camera. Like how hard is that?
Somewhere out there, there's a Courtney shitting cam.
Yeah.
You know how you're going to break Instagram? Post that Courtney shitting story. but I mean, seriously, those things do happen, I'm sure. And yeah, it's just ups and downs, the sport's changing, especially races like this. There will always be options for other types of experiences.
Yeah. Do you think we'll have to like regulate cameras and film at some point? Because I think the hard part is there's like the official UTMB cameras, but then there's like people out there just following around with a camera right in athletes' faces. And I mean, I think it's amazing for promoting the sport. It's also really hard.
Yeah, I think they might have to start getting rules that you can't run with athletes.
Yeah.
But aside from that, part of UTMB is that it's a circus.
Yeah. Well, actually, and Tour de France is the exact same way. Yeah. Like, think about all the people running behind bikes.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had literally naked people up running behind bikes.
They've had bikers fall.
Yeah, exactly. Many times. Bikers that get like hit by crowd members. Yeah.
You don't go to the circus if you don't want to see the trapeze, right? And you're going to see some trapezes here. Okay. So, do you want to do suggestions or get right into the big narratives?
Let's get right into the big narratives. Let's save suggestions for our France hot takes.
Okay, great. We'll
do, yeah.
Granted, I think that suggestions might get into some of the training.
Let's do suggestions.
Okay, we'll do suggestions.
You win.
So, I think that this is an important reflection just because, bring you a little into the race before we get into these big, big narratives. First one, as we talked about, we'll go through these rapid fire. Get out here early. I think what I've seen from these races is 10 days before UTMB, 7 days before CCC, maybe 4 days before OCC. If you're doing some of those races, again, 7 to 10 days before TDS. It's absolutely essential to fully acclimate yourself to the experience, the time zones. Make sure you have your nose strips. I forgot my nose strips on this trip, so I've been running with like naked closed nostrils. It's been quite disturbing.
Well, I feel like, I felt so bad for you about that. Yeah. But there were a lot of nose strips out there.
There were.
And a lot of them said huzzah, so I wonder if they were David Roach influenced. But I totally agree with you, especially the time zones. Like, I think Leo is actually interesting because he's... Like, I feel like he's very raw in the sense of, like, he's just doing... he's just doing what he can to get by. And today was the first day that he had his morning poop.
Yeah.
And we're just about to go home, and I feel like it's taken him nine days to adjust to the time zone, and we're going back home. But yeah. I feel like, think about that before your race, is just how helpful that is. Like, for me, I'm not an afternoon, evening runner, but I felt really comfortable here. Like, I could run at 3, 6 p.m., and I feel like my internal time clock is just starting to adjust.
So true. Yeah. Seeing those athletes with nose strips, part of me wanted to trip them and just karate chop them to the ground, take their nose strip and be like, huzzah, bitch, because I needed it. Okay. Number two, get a place just outside of town. Either, just a half mile is all it takes. You can look at where we're staying on our Stravas. The little green dot is a great general vicinity. If you're staying right in town, you're in for a lot of noise, a lot of stress, a lot of happenings all the time.
And I think if you're doing that, also get a bike too.
Yeah.
So we've had the fortune to Ricardo, who we met and who interacted with us and drove us around, lent us a bike. And it's been so fun to get to town on a bike. There's something about riding a bike when you're not actually riding for exercise and just joyriding. I love it so much.
The French really live up to the stereotypes, though. The number of times in the mornings when I would be walking with Leo to the grocery store and I'd see French people riding their fancy bikes with a baguette and that's it. I'm like, okay, this isn't this. I expected some stereotypes, but not this. I'm like, if at this point, I mean, could you imagine in the US if the same thing happened? Like, if we were in Idaho, in Boise, and people were just coming back from the grocery store in the morning carrying potatoes. It's like, what is up with this?
I feel like we could do that for every region. Wisconsin cheese.
Yeah.
Florida tanning oil. And very weird voting ballots on the back of a bike.
Good references. I really like that.
I'm doing my part. You're usually the Florida guy.
Yeah.
I just became the Florida girl for the
first
time.
Gotta hang on Florida once a month. That's super key. Limit indoor exposures and wash your hands. I think we didn't have too many indoor exposures. Who knows? I think it's just, maybe you shouldn't chug milk if you're not used to it. Or maybe you should start chugging milk in the US. I'm not sure what the answer is there.
Yeah, man. But I'm actually really glad because we're going to have a swap party on Wednesday night before the races. And we had this conversation, maybe it's not the best idea to put all of our best athletes in an indoor room with each other. And I'm so glad we had that intuition because, that would have been really hard.
Next one. Big quads.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. My first run here in Chamonix did a decent amount of vert. And as I was on the way down, I was like, I need to go home and eat a cheeseburger and grow these quads.
Yeah. Yeah. The muscles are where it's at. Do not shy away from being strong as fuck. And I think that this type of trail running really points that out. It's one of the reasons that things like food doping and the things we talk about with fueling are really exemplified in this sport. And I think why this sport can be so healthy, even as athletes do unthinkably long things, it motivates you to treat your body really well, feel well, get strong.
One of my favorite things as we're out there spectating is kind of prognosticating where the runner is going to finish based off of how they're looking. And I felt like I had this quad bias that anyone that came through with like ridiculously strong quads, there was a correlation between how I was prognosticating them and their quad size. And it was pretty interesting.
Thick thighs save races and lives. Get vert closer to the races. I think one of the coaching lessons I've learned is that the feel matters. Keep some vert in your training, like within the week before, like you're going to see in the race. It's a little counterintuitive, but I think the body needs to stay prepared for it.
Okay, can you put numbers on that? So say an athlete's racing on Saturday, typical time to have a race. The Saturday before doing a 12-mile long run, how much vert would you recommend for a race like UTMB that has so much vert?
Vert ratio of the race, you know, like of the steep parts, like as much as that is a lot. You should be adapted so it doesn't break you down at all. And then even the Tuesday before, maybe do some vert. Mm-hmm. Like not the whole, it doesn't have to be the vert ratio, but I think that the downhills in particular, they leave a little bit quicker than we'd like to think. Not in terms of the long-term adaptations, but in terms of some of the shorter-term ones. Maybe it's neuromuscular field, the nervous system, some of the theories for how delayed onset muscle soreness might not just be muscle breakdown, but connected to like the axons of the nerves. So I think a little bit of that's important.
Well, I really like vert ratio. I feel like we haven't talked about that a lot. Is thinking about the mileage vert of your race coming up is very helpful. A little daunting for UTMB.
Yes, so daunting. And then we have a few other things we're going to get into later, but we need to get to the big narratives right now.
We do. Yeah, which very
is
important.
First one, as biased as we are, is U.S. domination.
High five. That was exciting. And we actually kind of predicted that on our last podcast.
We did?
Yeah. I said Zach Miller. You said Jim Walmsley.
And then I said the trails are just going to be all about the U.S. athletes in the coming 10 years and happened a little sooner. So we had so much amazingness across every single race. At UTMB, we had Jim, Zach, Courtney, Leah. At CCC, American men went 3, 4, 5, 6 and U.S. women crushed it. OCC, great performances as well.
Actually, OCC, some of the American women got taken out by that GI bug. I have a feeling they were hanging out together.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And points out that could have been even better.
Yeah.
But the place we need to start is Courtney freaking DeWalter and that performance. We need to sit down in this a little bit and fully embrace it. As I was saying her name, I just got a chill down my leg. Interestingly,
I get a chill every time I say the name Courtney. Yeah. If we have a girl someday, we should name her Courtney.
It's like a baguette for the soul.
Oh yeah. But it's like, you need your morning baguette and snack baguette and lunch baguette all day long. Or just be like Courtney, Courtney, Courtney and get those goosebump vibes.
Yeah. So, okay. Take a step back. She won Western States in course record, won Hard Rock in a course record, won UTMB by a lot, not course record. And so I think there's a few reflections here. First, we're never going to see anything like this again.
Well, people are calling it the triple crown of racing. And I feel like we actually shouldn't term that because people that are not Courtney should not do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're saying she won the triple crown, but I'm kind of worried that it perpetuates this now new narrative of athletes that are going for the triple crown. And I don't think I think actually for Courtney, it's smart. She's an outlier.
Yeah.
She clearly has these incredible performances and the recovery to back it up. But I feel like take a non-Courtney athlete and that triple crown could ruin a career.
And I think maybe the etymology of triple crown is really interesting here. So triple crown, as I understand it, either comes from baseball or horse racing. So in baseball, it's someone that leads the league in batting average, home runs, and RBIs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In horse racing, it's winning the Preakness, the Belmont, and the Kentucky Derby.
Look at your sports knowledge.
Right off the head.
I didn't know either of those.
I even know sports with horses, Megan. You can be any sport.
Is that a sport?
With horses?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. see who can avoid breaking a leg and being shot in the backstretch. That's my true feeling about horse racing. Don't feel great about it. But I think those analogies are interesting because if I know horse racing correctly, I think the Triple Crown went about 40 or 50 years without happening from the 60s or 70s to relatively recently. The Triple Crown, I think, went from Carl Yastrzemski in 1968 to Miguel Cabrera in the mid-2000s.
Okay, this is a look into your brain. You have so much random knowledge that just comes out and like vomits itself out at amazing times, and I love you for it.
Oh, man, I know all about horses. I know a lot about horses.
I mean, we've literally never talked about horse racing really in our relationship, but it's coming out now.
You ever just stared at a horse's butt?
No, I get real scared of horses.
Okay, maybe I know too much about horses.
Yeah, they're big creatures and smelly creatures.
That's what I like.
Actually, I really wanted to ride horses as a kid. My parents were like, they're too expensive. You're going to get a concussion. And I was denied.
They're too thick. Sorry. I'm not creepy with horses, I promise. But both of those 40 or 50 years apart. I think the difference is that what Courtney did is truly unprecedented. So every year there's a possibility that someone gets the Triple Crown mm-hmm. in those sports. In this sport, it could only be Courtney. And I think history is going to show that she is one of a kind in a way that will not never be matched and will never be seriously even contended with. And so I think that the etymology of Triple Crown is instructive because it's not like that. Even though those were rare achievements for a while, her achievement is unthinkable. It's a first and last. And we're seeing it in real time. The problem is when you're in it, no one thinks they're seeing the last.
Yeah, everyone believes. They're like, I'm going to do the Triple Crown.
Or thinks that somebody else could be as dominant as her. And it's truly never going to happen. Like, she is just on another plane of existence. Even at UTMB, you saw it, though. So
she was human out there, though.
She was human. She was not horse, yeah. which I was disappointed by. because you know me, horses, Megan, they're so thick. Okay, I'll stop. No more horse jokes.
I'm going to have to start, like, neighing as just to get you aroused.
Can you do it once for the podcast?
Nay. That's a creepy nay.
Okay, we're going to have to stop the podcast. And we're back. That was a 10-minute break.
Only 10 minutes.
Megan, I was too aroused. But we actually saw her on the course randomly when we were driving at the end of the race as she was going up one of the final climbs. And she was struggling, yeah. You know, as much as Courtney can struggle, she's still being delightful to everybody, but it wasn't as dominant as we've seen in the past. Like, she was about an hour behind her course record, though the course has changed, so it's not directly one-to-one comparable. So I think there was some evidence of some fatigue perhaps starting to work in. Shows how hard this accomplishment is. Also shows how she's the best athlete we've ever seen, maybe across any sport. Like, I can't think of anyone who matches her dominance at any sport as her at this sport.
And how comfortable she is in the pain cave to reach that dominance.
Can you think of any analogy for across sports history for Courtney?
I mean, it's hard because I feel like so many of them are male analogies, like Michael Jordan, but Courtney is...
Definitely not Michael Jordan because he didn't win the finals every year.
That's true.
He, you know, didn't win the MVP every year. I think maybe we could look at like Bill Russell or something, winning 11 championships in a row in the NBA. Maybe that type of thing would be comparable. Maybe Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100 points if we're going to the NBA. Maybe Babe Ruth in baseball. I think Babe Ruth is probably the best analogy. But there's no one close.
But it's hard because those are all male analogies. Did you think about that? Like, And I think it's so cool what Courtney is doing for women's sport.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, like Mia Hamm. I can't really think of anyone that's close across, you know, any field of sports or even like existence. It's just insane. Like, maybe the closest comparable is like Genghis Khan, yeah. You know, who goes from Mongolia all the way to Europe back before automotive things. Like, maybe that's the thing. And Courtney's doing it with love, not with like murder.
Oh my God. Her love, the way that she like handles herself and her character out there is pretty wild. How much of the growth of trail running do you think is accounted for by Courtney? Like, I feel like UTMB plays a big role, but Courtney, I feel like, captures the imagination in a way that has really contributed to the growth of trail running across countries, across genders, across just like so many different types of people.
Courtney, Jim, UTMB, I think it's just this critical mass that has, and Killian, I mean, obviously, it's just hit like mainstream in a way. It's hit it so that if you're on the lookout for it, you'll find it. And that's kind of what our podcast has seen too. Like, our numbers keep increasing beyond what we thought was possible. And I think it's because, you know, we're just hitting the symbol in the background and more people are getting tuned into that noise so that even though our symbol has not changed, people are hearing it. And I think that trail running as a whole is like that. More people are hearing it. And a lot of that comes through Courtney and through her inspiration. So at the finish, when she was being interviewed, she had this quote: "Anytime we're given the opportunity to try something difficult or crazy, we should absolutely take it."
I love that. What do you want to do that's difficult or crazy? Have you thought about that? What that is in your life?
Like, grindstone. Yeah. That's it for me. Is like coming up here, you know, part of me is like, after this trip, after getting sick, should I actually do it? And saw Courtney finish and is like, yep, I should do it. Yep. Even if I'm unsure, especially because I'm unsure. That's exactly why I should do it. I'll learn a lot more about myself from that. And that's because of Courtney. you know? Okay, other narratives. We'll get in a little more on Courtney later. Leah Yingling.
Leah freaking Yingling.
Megan's athlete. She was swap athlete.
Eighth at UTMB, coming off a top 10 at Western States.
Yeah.
Pulling off top 10 at Western States and UTMB in the same year is really hard. Actually, I was sharing some like Instagram stories of Leah, and in one of them that I posted then deleted within 3 minutes, I was like, top American Leah Yingling. And I totally forgot that. I mean, I didn't forget that Courtney was American, but to me, Courtney is, she's like above
extraterrestrial.
Yeah. Yeah. She's exactly like, she's the Genghis. She's like, is, I don't even know how to describe her, but she takes on multitudes of nationalities. Yeah. And so I had to delete that.
I like that you bailed on the Genghis Khan. I was like, I think I thread that needle well for a mass murderer.
I know. I was like, Megan, jump ship. Yes.
I think extraterrestrial is the way to go. She's like a super being.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Like a Greek god almost, where she has human traits, but isn't fully human. Like Maui in Moana.
Oh yeah. Actually, Moana here is, we didn't talk about that, is Vignana.
Yeah. Different name.
Different European Moana is different. Apparently there's an Italian stripper named Moana.
No.
That's what the theory is.
The theory is that there's a copyright claim on Moana because Italy's most famous porn star is named Moana. So they had to change the name of the movie in Europe. Though it's debated whether that's the actual reason, but I choose to think that it is. That sounds amazing. So Leah, amazing job coaching. Like, do you have any reflections on her journey?
Oh my gosh. She's just, her progression over the last few years has been wild. And I feel like she's really like sat in it and believed and leveled up. But I think in the process too, she's really like committed to it. So she's been here. She got here about like 3 weeks before the race and has just put herself out there. And I felt like she actually, it was really cool. So we had dinner with her 2 nights before the race.
Yeah.
And her level of confidence gave me goosebumps as a coach. And that was a takeaway that I have actually for a lot of the athletes that did well here is we interacted with them and said things like, you're going to do great out there. And their response, usually people, when we say that, undercut themselves. And I felt like everyone here that performed really well knew it.
Yep.
And they weren't afraid to say it. And Leah was like that. She said to me, Megan, I'm going to finish that second night without a headlamp.
Yep.
And that meant she was going to run a really fast time, probably a time that could be historically
podium.
On the podium.
Yeah.
And you know what? She did it. She came in before, like as it was sunrise and ran a really fast time. And I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, but
yeah, she finished before sunset. I mean,
I feel like that self-talk though is so important. She had that when we had dinner with her and John Rea, you had an interaction with him. And what did you say to him?
Okay. So this is a moment for everyone to focus. If you're just trying to find random lessons from these experiences, pay attention now. So we're seeing tons of people before the race, during the race, and the people that were like downplaying themselves almost always lived up to their downplay, lived down to how they were playing. Like, and it was so uncanny by the end that I was like, all right, humility has got to fucking go. We cannot have it. I don't care if you're worried about coming across as like too confident or cocky or anything like that. Fuck that. The only way you're ever going to achieve anything is by doing that. You are going to live up to the ceiling set by your expectations. And so before the race, you know, we had these experiences with athletes. I don't necessarily want to share all those, but I do want to share the one I have with John Rea, who had an absolute breakthrough in fourth in CCC. We don't coach him and don't really know him, but are aware of him.
Oh, he's delightful.
And he's aware of us. Yeah. He's a great guy. He trains well. He's an amazing athlete. And I was like, I just went by him real quick, said, you're ready. And he said something like, yep, or I know, or something like that. Something very matter of fact, succinct, to the point, and said, affirmed it. And I knew right then he was going to have an incredible race because it's like, okay, yep, he knows. And whether he had an incredible race or not, I think that energy is key. And it manifests in the race as well.
Oh, we were seeing that as we were out there yelling woohoo and huzzah at people. We got varied responses.
Yes.
Some people would say things like, I'm dying. This sucks. This is horrible. And it was fascinating actually to go back through the results and to see how those athletes performed. And granted, there's a bias there because if they feel horrible, they're probably, you know, struggling at that point in the race. But I felt like that negative self-talk in a race is never helpful, never productive, even if you truly do feel horrible.
Yeah, just, and it matters. Don't cut yourself down. Like,
yeah.
Why? Everyone's in the pain cave. Drew, seeing Drew out there, Drew had another breakthrough race, even after comforting me during my vomiting. And I think we'll see about Jim and all, you know, but is right in the running for Ultra Runner of the Year. Drew was not feeling great when we saw him at like 38K into the 100K. But you can never tell based on seeing him. Like, he responded and was in it and was never going to give up. And he knew that because he has set up this framework where he's not going to say, oh, I just don't feel good or something like that. He's going to say like, I'm in it or something like that. Like, he might convey it, but he's not going to like cut himself down in the process and give himself negative vibes. So make sure you're not doing that in life. Don't cut yourself down. If someone asks you at work or relationships or anything like that, you are a fucking boss, whether you succeed in your goals or not, and own that shit.
And we've been talking about Courtney and Leah, and I feel like both of them exemplify this attitude and this approach time and time again, even deep in the pain cave. But we saw it on the men's side too.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim Walmsley, Zach Miller, can we go through that race? Because it was to me such a wild display of athleticism and just swirling around in that pain cave and getting comfortable with it, which Zach Miller does all the time.
But I think first we need to talk about Jim and highlight Jim and celebrate Jim Walmsley's journey.
He did it.
So yeah, he did it. Jim, so proud of Jim. What a guy. As always, bring back to when we first met him. Met him in 2016. He hadn't really done anything on the scene yet. I was at a random 30K in Montana, and Jim, just unsponsored at the time, just like there for a good time, goes out and whoops my ass right at the peak of my Lifetime Fitness. I just won Way Too Cool 50.
Right from like, you're amazing, but like it was right from like mile one too.
No. It was at mile 1.1 of the 30K where it hit a steep climb. So we were on a climb for like 3 miles. And so it was a little later than that. But at the end of the climb, it had like a 300 meter section that was probably 22%. And we hammered the start of the climb. Like our gaps were 440. And I was trying to, I was like, I can break this Jim guy. Who's Jim? Jim ain't shit. Stop Jim. That's me. and he put probably 40 seconds on me on this little climb, proceeded to beat me by just miles. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be the best runner in the world. And, you know, after the race, he was so humble and kind, which like humble in a good way, humble in a way of like, asking us questions to learn from anything we had known, particularly about like, oh, it'd be really cool to like wear a jersey of a shoe company, which is funny because now he's probably rich as shit off this stuff.
Was he with anyone before Hoka? Wasn't he with,
I think he was with Drymax or something.
Yeah, like you're right. A sock company. Like a sock company.
So he didn't have like an actual deal. And to see his journey from there is so cool. He decided that UTMB was a race he wanted to win after he already reset what was possible at Western States. He moved here a few years ago.
Apparently he lives in like a small little town here.
Yeah.
I was expecting like when we came to Chamonix, I was like, oh, this is where Jim lives. But no, he lives down the valley in a very small town.
Yeah. He's probably grabbing morning baguettes.
Right? And the snack baguettes and the dinner baguettes.
Yeah. He's gone, you know, fully natural in the French way. And it's fascinating to me and so inspirational to see someone make their big goal public, take risks for it, have those risks not pay off fully for a bit. He's done great here, but he hasn't won, hasn't had his dream day. And then during the race itself, in the night, he was going through rough moments.
Yeah, it wasn't paying off in those moments. Yeah. And I have to imagine what was going through his brain, because I imagine when you've had struggles at a race like this, returning time and time again, there's a mental thing of standing on the start line and being like, is this another year?
Yeah. And he even said that when he was going through that, part of him was saying, oh, I should start thinking about how many spaces I'm going to lose, the people behind me. He even wanted to say to Zach at one point, if this isn't my day, I hope it's yours, which he didn't, because all of a sudden he started feeling amazing. He made some minor changes with his crew, the awesome Jesper Zoe. And
what do you think those changes were, by the way?
Oh, I don't know.
He said minor changes. And I was like, what did he do? I'm so curious. Yeah.
I feel like it's like Superman going into the phone booth. That where Clark Kent becomes Superman, except he was already Superman. And then he went into the phone booth as Superman, came out as like Super Duperman. And so he went and just absolutely annihilated the course.
Maybe he had his baguette.
You deep throat a baguette and you go faster in French races. That is the lesson we're learning. So he set every record, including the overall record. And most of the splits happened at the end. If you watched the live stream, you saw him just motoring on these climbs and descents. I have no idea how it's humanly possible. One of the best performances in history, athletic history altogether, and to know how it comes together after everything is just wild and so exciting and so inspirational.
Well, to me, I was thinking about the pass when he made that pass of Zach Miller.
Yeah.
And so for him, third place was Jermaine Granger, and he said that Jermaine catching up to him. So Jim was in second. Jermaine, I hope I'm saying that right, is in third. And he was like, it was a kick in the ass. And it's kind of curious to me how race dynamics play out and how a true competitor like Jim gets caught And that lights his ass on fire instead of like sitting in his brain like, oh, I'm getting caught. And I feel like that to me is a reflection both for myself and for athletes is no, when someone catches you, it lights your ass on fire. It's not like this like mental spiral. And I feel like the best have that. Courtney has that, Jim has it. And I'm curious what would have happened if he hadn't gotten caught from second.
With all the stomach bugs around, I don't know if we should say lighting your ass on fire
as
a good thing.
Might cause a bomb. But might blow up all of Chamonix.
I think the predetermined narratives play a huge role here. So much of this is decided before you get to the start line.
Yeah.
And Jim had made these decisions before the start line about how he was going to respond.
That he was going to win. Yeah.
And that if things didn't go well, how he was going to like reconceptualize that on the fly. So yes, he won this day, but if he had finished sixth, it would have been the grittiest, toughest motherfucking sixth when other people would have DNF'd, right? And similarly, in everything we do in life, so many of the decisions are made before we get there. And so think about that. It gets back to not cutting yourself down, because whatever you expect, the reason that manifesting becomes reality is there's a million different little tendrils of possibility that we're exposed to. And the ones we pull on end up being the ones that we think are destiny. And it could have been any of those. So the reason manifesting matters is it makes you aware of what's possible and knowing which tendrils might be the ones that unleash your potential.
Well, I love you're taking the glass half full approach of tendrils of possibility. I just see tendrils of shit shows too at UTMB because as we talked about in the last race, it's impossible to have a perfect race at UTMB. Definitely. And I feel like the best athletes like Jim and Leah and Courtney, they are able to play with those tendrils of imperfections or tendrils of shit shows and respond to them and troubleshoot them and also predict them and be aware of them. And I feel like it takes that internal based why to do that. And I'm just seeing that as like a repeated pattern.
You know who else I really want to talk about before we get to some rapid fire takeaways?
Zach freaking Miller.
You called it.
I called it. I've been calling Zach Miller for like months.
Yeah.
Before anyone was listening.
Actually, our picks did so well throughout this race. We should give ourselves a pat on the back. When Zach Miller was looking like he was going to win, I almost was like, oh shit, Megan manifested. She was pulling on the right tendril. Were you pulling on Zach Miller's tendril, Megan?
I was pulling on his tendrils. I've been pulling on his tendrils for a long, long time.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we met him over a decade ago, raced him at short distance races actually back in the day. And what I remember about him is no athlete I've ever raced scared me more to go against, because I know there's athletes that are more talented than me. I know there's athletes that go up hills or down hills really fast, but there is no athlete tougher than Zach Miller. And I'm not willing to do what he does every single race. He is so damn strong. And he manifested that strength on the course. It was just a delight to see.
And he does so with such like passion and duende. It's amazing. But I feel like on this podcast, we've had this running bit of a dump truck and being your like most powerful dump truck self. But as I saw Zach come through the finishing chute, I was like, this is not a dump truck. This is a freaking freight train. You know how you do like rock, paper, scissors shoot and like rock, trunk, scissors?
Yeah.
I actually think freight train might trump dump truck.
Well, it's perfect because, you know, we talked about Zach before. And one of the things that we knew him most for, we're not talking about his body, we're talking about the way he eats. So when we were on Team USA with him, he ate like what I thought at the time was four dinners, and I now realize is an appropriate dinner when you're training. And so instead of dump truck, maybe what he is like the bus in Speed that just can't go below 55 miles an hour, because once he gets going, he can't be stopped. And he's earned that through so much hard work in how he treats himself, how he overcomes adversity. So Zach and Jim both just put on a clinic out there, and it's an honor to call yourself an American trail running fan after seeing what they did.
And I felt like the way that they were lighting it up out there was inspiring to each other.
Yeah.
And I feel like that friendship, that camaraderie, and seeing them at the finish line embrace, it was just, oh my God, it was so cool.
So cool. One other story from UTMB. Now we're going to get into some rapid fire things. We have so many things we want to talk about. Ludovic Pomeray at age 48 in the top five. Wow.
And he ran so fast. I saw a stat that he ran an hour faster than when he won UTMB in 2016.
Wow.
How, like, thinking about that with age, but I also feel like it goes to show how our sport has progressed and how athletes coming in and running faster has only elevated the athletes that are already there in the sport to the point where he's defying age.
Yeah. And it points out that age, while there are physiological realities that we're all dealing with, the thesis of the SWAT podcast is that so much of those the things that we think are physiological are actually psychological, related to downgrading training, cutting yourself short, thinking that you can no longer do it. I think Ludo is showing what can happen when you just remove those constraints entirely and wake up every morning not knowing what age you are.
And it should be inspiring too, because I feel like so often we see, like for me, this is like flipping the gender-based bias of age a little bit too.
True.
Because
yeah.
women, we know, often have really long tails of like fantastic end of careers. And I feel like there's kind of this narrative that we see that more in the women's field than in the men's field, but we're seeing it in the men's field. And I hope that's inspiring to other men out there in their 40s that like, no, you can keep cooking. Like you can keep training and performing really well and setting UTMB PRs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in their studies to back this up, like one of the best aging studies we've seen recently found that VO2 max reductions were mostly explained by training reductions, not age. And that's so fascinating. And yes, there are some realities that you have to face with reducing your training so you don't like break into a million tiny little pieces. but there's a lot of opportunities there. You can work in cross training. You can get creative with doing uphills, uphill treadmill, things like that. If you are aging, no matter where you are, where you are right now is your youth. You don't realize it. You only realize it in the future, but make sure you're embracing your youth while you have it.
I know, youth.
Youth!
I think about that sometimes with too much nostalgia.
Okay, speaking of a little bit of nostalgia wistfulness, I wanted to mention one moment from the finish line that made me cry. The hardest tears I probably shed was Seth Ruling crossing the finish line, American in sixth place. An amazing finish at CCC.
At CCC, yep.
And he has been through health issues this year. I'm not going to explain his health issues for him, but so scary, you know, like type of thing that makes you question whether this is possible. And when he came down the finishing chute, he was already crying in the last, you know, 50 meters. And waiting for him was Drew Holman, who's one of his best friends. We're all great, really close, but they train together all the time. They've been there for each other through thick and thin in life and in running. And they both were crying and they started embracing. And then their two partners, Sasha and Carrie Ann, were crying and then everybody embraced. And it was the ultimate community moment that I just wish everyone could bottle up and drink little sips of whenever you're sad.
It's like an earthquake ripple effect where it's like the crying and the tears and the hugging. It's like you just want to turn to the person next to you and be like, give me a huge hug.
Yeah. Okay. So now some, you know, thoughts on the races generally. First, actually, I wanted to mention some things from before the race. One entire shoe team got drug tested.
Why do you think that happened? Do you think that was like a tip off? Like, I feel
great
like that
question,
because I mean, we see that often in like UCI in the cycling world where they'll be like, it's like complicated. They'll be
like Festina or Operation Puerto.
Things that they'll be like very directed at specific teams. But
this was just testing though.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I feel like doing it targeted at one team is very strange to me.
Well, we don't know if other teams had it and just the rumor of one team having it got out.
I feel like if other teams had it, we would know.
Maybe. I mean, we're not that plugged in, Megan.
We're pretty plugged in.
We're not that plugged in. We're
that's
kind
true,
of like,
actually.
Especially in Europe, we're like, we don't have the right plugs.
Yeah, right.
You know, like the American plugs,
figuratively,
the American plugs do not work here.
And we're just electrocuting ourselves in the process.
I do not understand French plugs.
Yeah, I don't
know. Or European plugs.
Yeah.
Guys, use our little prong plugs. Yours are just flimsy. It doesn't work. Do better. But very interesting for the sport. This was over a week before the race. Might indicate that more random testing is starting to be a part of it.
Which is a good thing, I think, actually. Yeah.
So we'll
do you think it's a good thing?
Oh, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Get it out there. But, you know, I think that it was unexpected, which is, we'll hear if there's anything more from that. Next, the coverage was so good. I was looking at the numbers, and their live streams, just in English, are going to hit over 1 million viewers.
Wow.
Relatively soon.
Yeah.
And think about that. You're starting to get on YouTube live streams this many. What's possible when this does come to places like ESPN or Netflix? We're in for like a tsunami of attention to the sport. It's just a question of when it happens and how the, you know, this like true upwelling happens.
Well, I think Netflix is going to be the one to make it happen. The Netflix Tour de France documentary was incredible. Well, yeah. We could do that at UTMB.
In what way?
I mean, I feel like it captivates the imagination even more than Tour de France. And I feel like there's the team element of it. There's being here in Chamonix. There's being out there seeing Courtney. And I don't know. I feel like we could have a really good trail running Netflix.
Okay. I don't really understand the team element of trail running. I know this is a little bit of like a controversial hot take.
Yeah.
But it's like,
actually, I don't either.
Your team isn't like, yes, your crew matters, your support network matters, and your team as a support network matters, but it's one of many.
But the dynamics don't matter like cycling. Like in cycling,
yeah, there's no influence.
In cycling, it's a huge, I mean, I think, and then people that don't quite understand the dynamics of cycling, it doesn't seem immediately intuitive, but the way drafting works is teams matter so much. And here it's just kind of, it's camaraderie more than dynamics or exactly. strategy or anything like that.
It would be like having teams be your friend group
exactly.
or anything.
Yeah.
That being
your
said,
posse, your drama.
While I'm saying this, I'm also checking my bias where I'm like, teams don't really matter.
And then we're like, swap.
And also USA, USA.
Yes.
Like swap, maybe there's some connection, but at least there's a coaching uniting thing.
That's true. Yeah. Because many of these teams, like, and also this is counter to UCI, like cycling.
Yeah.
Most of those teams are, they train together, they're coached together. And like Adidas Terex is a bunch of athletes coming in from all over the world. And they often haven't seen each other in a whole year.
Yeah.
And different coaches, different training programs. And so it is vastly different.
Yeah, so different. And then maybe just like an overarching narrative that we had talked about a little bit earlier, but to just really draw home is two things. One, these races, you know, start fast and then become about survival relatively early on. And two, we want to point out just how hard these races are. So for everyone listening, it is really drawn home that whatever beauty you might see, whatever song they play at the UTMB finish line, which is this really uplifting tome from, like, I don't know, some random movie or something, but it is extremely cinematic, that stuff smooths over a lot of bones and gristle and shit and guts out there. And you really see it when you're in there in person.
Well, when you're in there in person too, you can hear what people are saying when they cross the finish line. Yeah. And I wish they were mic'd up.
Yeah.
Because it's the true, I mean, it's actually fascinating because I feel like so much in running, you finish a marathon and you're like, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, okay, maybe, like, I'm starting to dream big. I feel like after UTMB, it takes 5 months.
Yeah.
Like athletes go to these places in the pain cave. That's, yeah, eventually you recover from that and you get excited to do another UTMB. But I think it sticks around a lot longer and it's truly hard to capture that on live stream. Actually, I got a text from one of my athletes and I feel like this text captures just how hard UTMB is. And when athletes finish, I mean, I think it's this mix of swirling emotions, but it's also like, holy fuck, why did I just do that? That was so hard. And this captures it. The text says, oh my God, that was fucking unreal. Took me to some of the deepest, darkest places in my mind that I'd rather never go back to. That course is so savage, especially the last quarter. Why the hell does anyone do this race? Lol, my body is completely trash. I can't believe that I finished that loop. Holy fuck.
But that's what it's about. Can't believe I finished. Yeah, and I think the difference between UTMB, CCC, and OCC is illustrated there. So
yes,
UTMB, the 100-mile race, CCC, the 100K, OCC, the 50K. UTMB starts at 6 p.m. and goes into the night and punches them in the face repeatedly in the dark. And you can imagine that that just leaves athletes totally wrecked. And then they still have to cover 106 miles over all of this terrain. So UTMB itself, like, it's a race that we make sure athletes are really, really mentally and physically prepared for. CCC and OCC, much different stories in that you need to be prepared, but a little bit less of stepping into an inferno of rage, which is what I would characterize UTMB as.
And we saw that spectating. Like, we are out there yelling woohoo, yelling huzzah at CCC, OCC, UTMB racers. And when we saw the UTMB racers, like, even halfway through, it was like looking at carnage, like zombie carnage. Like, there was no one home when we were saying woohoo. Whereas at CCC and OCC, like, athletes, you could see there's spirit and soul in their eyes. And it's kind of interesting to me how you could, I mean, it was just like looking at vacant humans trudging in UTMB.
There were some soul. I'll give some people credit for soul.
Yeah.
We got some huzzas in return. Not too many though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the soul level was much lower.
Yeah. And I mean, it points out how these races play out. So when we saw Leah Yingling at UTMB, I think it was at like mile 75 or something of the race, one of the first times we saw her, she said to us, my quads are gone in this race. But what's fascinating seeing her as the race went on, she proceeded to move up and put in some of historically good splits. And so it shows that, you know, early on in these races, yes, it is pretty fast. Later, it's about occupying that pain cave, getting
survival.
Comfortable with your, whatever your constraints are. So for Leah, her quads were gone. And she worked so freaking hard to hike as fast as she could and then keep running on the downs and then run when she could on the little flats. And you know what? It moved her up through the race. So she understood those constraints, worked with them. And so it's a good reminder about ultras. We're not training necessarily for the end of the race in training because so much of that is like, you won't know until you get there what you need. And usually what you need is a lot more in between your ears than it is below your waist.
That's beautifully said. Well, I love, so Leah came through and when we saw her, she said, you know, I have no quads. And both of our response, which we said at the same time, was, you don't need those quads.
You don't need quads?
You need quads.
Of course you don't need quads.
Just
mountain
corny,
legs?
Corny shuffle it.
Mountain legs, I want shit legs. That's exactly what I want. I also heard from Helen Mino Faulkner, an American that was on the podium at CCC, that she was just saying it was one of the hardest things she'd ever done. Interesting thing about her, proves our thesis a little bit. While it was so hard, every time we saw her on the course, She was a ball of joy and kindness and light. And I think part of that was probably to cope with just how difficult it was.
Okay, we also saw her early on. I think she really hit some hard, hard spots in the later parts of that race, which we didn't see her in those. But she's actually an interesting example because CCC, golden ticket race. Yeah. I felt like that wasn't, I think CCC is such this magical event by itself that the fact that it's a golden ticket race isn't like hotly talked about.
Yeah.
Whereas Black Canyon, it's like, there's so much conversation surrounding the golden ticket, and CCC here is just its own standalone event. But my favorite thing was she was standing on the podium and they were trying to give her a golden ticket. And she was like, get that away from me. And she was like, she
shoved it away.
She shoved it away. She doesn't want to race Western States. And I feel like after sitting in that pain cave, and she was very open, she's like, these races don't get easier. You just get faster.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's, it's so, so true. She was like, no Western States. And yeah. I respect that, actually. I really respect athletes that understand their, I mean, she's young. She understands her progression in sport. And I think someday she could win Western States. But the fact that she turned it down now, I actually think is pretty smart.
Yeah. And I love the Greg LeMond quote that you did there, that, you know, it doesn't get easier. You just go faster.
Yeah.
It also draws home to our broader focus on everyone in these races. In that, you know, I think when people are starting out, sometimes they think, oh, you know, those other people are superhumans or whatever. And they aren't. All of us feel the same exact things.
Oh, like, it all is so hard.
Yeah, and what Leah feels is the same thing. That's why I think, you know, we want to celebrate not just the people that are finishing these races, but people that DNF too, or people that are hoping like in 10 years to maybe be able to do something like this. Because it's all kind of the same general morass of things. So like we had athletes that suffered out there, even though we're had an amazing swap day for the most part.
7 swap athletes in the top 12 across all the races, which we were really excited about. Yeah.
And, you know, some lifelong breakthroughs on the international level is so cool. But there were also athletes that could have won or could have podiumed that didn't have that day for whatever reason. And, you know, the whole point is putting yourself out there, getting vulnerable. It's not a choice, even though we can hopefully direct that shit in the right place over time through training, through mindset, through just all of that. But even doing all of that, there's still a roll of the dice and you're playing a game of craps unless you're Courtney DeWalter, in which case you win every single time. It's a little bit different.
Well, I love what you're saying, that it's ubiquitous across the field, that it is this shared experience of everyone doing the big UTMB loop or CCC course or OCC or whatever it is. Because I feel like sometimes, and I've seen this and I felt this myself, is you do this transformative thing and how do you even begin to put it in words to describe it to the ones that you love? And that process is so hard. But I think what's cool is that like, but there's also thousands of other people that have done UTMB and they get it and they understand it. And it's, I think that shared connection between Courtney and the last place finisher is so cool in my book.
Yeah. And you know, I think your athlete's text about what it was, essentially what it is, I think it'd probably be tough to put into words exactly what the experience will mean to him in the future.
Yes. Yeah. But, and it's something that he probably will reflect on for months and years.
Yeah.
Like it's, I feel like it all happens so fast and such a blur. And you are sometimes this vacant zombie that it takes like sitting in an office meeting in 2 months and being like, oh my God, and now I remember that point of UTMB.
And even then, like the full meaning of this sport, I don't think will be fully illustrated. Like for me, the entire trip that we've had, seeing everyone, getting to spend it with you and Leo and see your amazing coaching in action, to share our love out there, but then also to see everyone else's love, sadness, all of that. What it feels like to me is, you know, when we walk outside and it's late at night and you're in a place with very few lights and you look up at the sky and there's unlimited numbers of stars.
I love that so much. Yeah.
But you can't take a picture of it. Like it just doesn't convey on your photo. There's no way to fully encapsulate how it makes you feel. That's how this sport, this experience at this event makes me feel. You know, it's big and small. It's happy and also a little melancholy, just on the scope of existence and, you know, how small it all is. So the sport's so cool. And for me, it is tied to how much I love stars.
Oh my gosh. It always comes back to stars. Yeah, right? Always. No, I mean, I feel like those mental pictures, I feel like I felt that so much in life where you're doing something so amazing and it's like mental picture. But sometimes for me post-race, I'm also so wrecked that I'm like, it's really hard to appreciate this moment.
Yeah.
And we saw that with UTMB finishers. Like Leah finished and she just was immediately pretty sick.
Yeah.
And you know, I was like, she had to go like, you know, go away into the med tent. And so many of our athletes had similar experiences of finishing and going right to the med tent. And my heart kind of broke for them because it's like, I want them to savor and finish and like feel that experience in a way that their bodies aren't like revolting against them.
Yeah.
But that happens for days and months and weeks after the fact.
The processing.
And I think that part is...
Not the med tent.
Yeah. Hopefully not the med tent.
Yeah.
And I think that process of processing it in the days, like it's... the immediate fact is such a whirlwind, but it's going to take days and weeks and months to process. And I love that.
Probably for spectators too.
Yeah.
Which
right?
is why this podcast is interesting, because we're processing on the fly.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's throw out a few more things from each of the races before we get to our Europe hot takes. I know people are really waiting on those. So first from OCC, the women's winner, Toni McCann, from South Africa, spent a lot of time biking before this race, points out how cross training can be so beneficial.
I heard it was up to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Curious though, so she broke her collarbone, which is the reason she was on the bike. And I do think it's a little bit faster to progress back into running if it's an upper body injury.
Yeah.
Lower body, if you're lower body injured and you have to be biking, usually that means you have to be a little bit more cautious on the return. Like I imagine she could take a pretty aggressive return back to run because it was her shoulder, not her leg. But I thought that was so cool. Like we're seeing the power of biking across the board and smart cross training and strength.
Yeah, I actually got to talk to her at the finish line
at
CCC. Yeah. And
she seems delightful.
She's absolutely delightful, but you know what else is delightful?
What?
Quizzing her on training.
Did she really?
Yeah, I wanted to ask her about training theory.
Oh, I love that.
Of course. She's a beast.
She entertain you?
Of course. I don't know if she knew who I was, though.
Yeah.
I didn't introduce myself.
She was like this random guy is asking me so many training questions.
Yeah. It's like, you don't, Toni, you're too cool for me.
Did you DM her and be like, you race so well? Like,
No.
Every once in a while, I'll send a DM to athletes. We're just doing our recruiting.
No, definitely not recruiting. She should keep
doing whatever she's doing. Exactly. Yeah. She's a goat.
What she told me about is she was doing 4 or 5 bike workouts a week.
Wow.
Focusing on her threshold. So actually trying to raise her bike power up. So doing concerted bike training, not just like kind of random bike training, not Peloton workouts or whatever, but doing FTP training. And would sometimes even do doubles and double workouts.
Wow.
So a little different than we'd expect. So
actually double workouts, not something you classically see on the bike.
Yeah.
Not something that actually we give.
But maybe it makes sense when you're a little bit limited musculoskeletally.
Yes,
so, you know, a runner is going to be less proficient at putting out tons of watts than a full-trained cyclist.
Because full-trained cyclists almost never do doubles on the bike.
Oh, yeah, because they can fully exhaust their aerobic and mechanical system right away. Mm-hmm. For a runner, you might not be able to exhaust your aerobic system fully before your mechanical system craps out. So that was interesting. Also wanted to shout out our hero, Rachel Drake in OCC.
Rachel Drake, 6th place, coming back postpartum. I think baby Lou is about a year now. And she struggled postpartum. She's been very open about that. Had multiple stress fractures in her pelvis. Came back and she threw down.
Yeah.
I cried a lot this weekend. Yes. I really cried for Rachel Drake. What a good human.
And she's put herself out there in so many races along the way.
She's had to race into fitness. And she raced early on post-stress fractures and was struggling in races and was very open about that. But I feel like they were such great training days that if she hadn't done that and hadn't put herself out there and took those risks in races on a very open setting, like she wouldn't have had that 6th place performance. And I felt like it was integral to what she did.
She is such a shining light in the world.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
It's remarkable. Okay, so what else do we want to talk about for OCC?
Katie Scheid?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, she girl's got range.
It's incredible.
Yeah, so UTMB winner last year, came back to get
second place at Western States.
Yeah, second at Western States, and girl's crushing it.
And then, you know, podium at OCC here at 50K. It's pretty remarkable. She's incredibly good.
Actually, I loved what she said. She was like, it was too fast to smile. Because she's known for having like being smile and having a lot of joyful. And she was like, I had to keep my head down and focus.
Maybe that's the secret I need to find out. Slightly fewer smiles, slightly more watts. and then for men, someone I wanted to highlight, a swap athlete, because I love him so much, Nick Handel. So very fascinating story here. He sold his company last year. We got connected through Drew. Drew had told me forever that Nick is not just one of the best humans in the world, but one of the best athletes, who hadn't really been able to focus on training that much. And this year he's been able to focus a little bit more, and he finished 11th. He was ahead of Splits that won the race last year, which just points out how much the sport's progressing. But it was a remarkable performance. And one thing I wanted to flag about him is he did a lot of uphill treadmills in training for it. So if you're out there and you like get a little beat up or whatever, remember, you can come to Europe and rock these climbs. If you're good at setting that treadmill to 15%, forgetting it and watching some Netflix.
We just did a big climb together. And as I was out there, I was just visualizing that uphill treadmill.
Yeah.
And it's so much better here. I feel like on the uphill treadmill, you're just a captive audience to the moving treadmill. Here you got rocks and roots and Mont Blanc in the distance. It's amazing. I was like, this is what I dream about when I'm on the treadmill.
And Megan set the record on one of the big climbs outside Chamonix. Congrats, Megan.
Oh,
that's incredible.
Thank you. It was fun.
With your treadmill thoughts.
Yeah, I was actually, I thought about the treadmill. And I also thought about, it's always curious what you think about on climbs.
What did you think about? I feel like you stopped yourself there. I want to hear what you were censoring.
Well, we had a babysitter, a French babysitter for Leo, who we never met before. And I did have a few moments that crossed my mind as I was out there. I was like, is Leo alive?
Yeah.
Did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a human trafficker, not the worst way in. Though maybe it wouldn't be because like you get some information on the person, but it could all be fake, right?
Well, I was like, oh, we didn't really.
Actually, yeah. Brings up what my mom said. I didn't tell you this because I didn't want to worry you. But before we traveled, the one thing she said is like, people are going to want to steal Leo. Yeah. He's so good and he's so cute. People are going to want to steal him. You hold him close.
Especially when he's applauding at UTMB finishers. Yeah. Yes.
He got very good at clapping. It's really remarkable to see. Okay, on to CCC. This is a place where we got to spectate throughout the race. At one point, we were eating salami like it was popcorn. This was after my stomach came back online, not before. Otherwise, we would have an explanation for why I felt so bad. And so many cool experiences we talked about a little bit already. But one I wanted to flag was John Alban, the winner. He comes from an OCR background. He's been dominating trails for a while. And I feel like this was good as consolation because earlier in the week, I took one of his course records on the climb. And so, you know what, John, you get one, I get one. We're kind of even now, right?
Oh, he looks so good out there. He looked incredible. Yeah, we saw him in, well, I didn't get to, you probably looked very sexy. Yeah. I didn't get to see you running, but he looked so good. And he was in second place and we saw him and we prognosticated, we're like, he's winning.
Yeah.
We knew that early on. He looked very controlled.
Yeah. So good. Dakota Jones, third place. Amazing bouncing back from a tough Western States. One thing that he said that was interesting is that it was a lot more running than he thought, which points out the difference between CCC and UTMB.
Yes.
At CCC,
yeah.
There is a lot of running.
Yeah.
At UTMB, you're really embracing the Euro style of moving through the mountains
because yeah.
It starts at night and everyone's dying by the end. So it was cool to hear him say that, kind of validates some of our approaches to the race.
And I think it also goes to show why there's been a lot of American dominance at CCC and historically not at UTMB. Yeah. But we're starting, I think we're starting to catch on in training theory and spending time over here. So I was really curious about that. But he looked great.
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful, beautiful stride.
His form
he
is
like floats.
Stunning. Him
yeah.
and Seth.
Yes.
Him and yeah. Seth. Dakota
and Jim.
Jones. Jim is different.
Jim is different. Jim is Jim.
Jim
levitates.
Yeah.
They float.
Yeah. Exactly. Jim is just a separate thing. Jim's yeah. like a deity.
Yes.
These guys are like models. Like the ultimate model, the best model ever. These are the Zoolander, the Hansel of models. They are so hot right now. But seeing Seth and Dakota run is kind of like, I don't know, it stirs something in my loins. I'm not exactly sure what, but it stirs it.
Well, we have videos of them.
Yeah.
We have videos of them from like mile 50 of
we
the race.
We should sell them on OnlyFans.
That was where I was going. But also, they looked way better at mile 50 than I look at mile one.
Yeah.
It was one of those modeling reflections, like, I could never be a model.
No. But maybe not. We don't sell them on OnlyFans. Maybe we sell them on Patreon.
Yeah, right?
So tons of fun stuff on Patreon, as always. Before we get to some final takeaways here, patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. If you support us there, you're supporting the podcast. You're also, you know, getting tons of free content or extra content from, you know, weekly posts to weekly bonus podcasts. We really put so much there.
Well, we've been having a lot of fun interacting with Patreon listeners here in Chamonix. Next year, we should have a gelato party.
Yeah.
Post-race, so we don't spread sickness around Chamonix. But I feel like it would be really fun to just do like a whole group of Patreon listeners
yeah.
together.
I feel like just
or a group hike or something.
Just all podcast listeners.
Yeah.
Just a big gelato meetup. That'd be so good.
Wouldn't that
right
be
in
fun?
That courtyard?
Yeah.
Oh my God. We had so many huzzas going through town today where people would yell huzzah to us and it meant so much. I loved it. Okay, finally, I don't think we're going to do our training thoughts yet. We'll save that for next episode.
Okay, I love that.
But
yeah.
I do want to do some hot takes.
Yeah, we got to keep UTMB in every episode for like the next year.
That's true.
Yeah, that's how I feel until I come back to Chamonix in the future.
We're going to get a lot of listens on this one because we'll be able to include both Courtney and Jim in the title. It's pretty damn good. Hey, if you're a new listener here, go to our page, give it 5 stars or wherever you're listening to the podcast and click follow. Even if you're not planning on listening again, it helps us out. You got this far, so clearly you don't hate us. All right, so a few French hot takes. First one, I don't really love cutting switchbacks, which is kind of the European way. Every switchback you see has a little trail in the middle of it to cut it. But I do like it if it gets me a record on a climb. And that's where I've changed my mind. I've realized how efficient it is to just take those little cuts. So cutting switchbacks, not sure how I feel about it, starting to be more on board.
Well, it's kind of empowering. So on the climb today, I was going for a segment and I took a few. I definitely didn't take as many.
You didn't take the good ones. There were a couple times where I was like, Megan, make a right. And you're like, no, I don't feel good about that one. That one is cheated.
Yeah. I feel like I have this moral compass surrounding yeah. switchbacks, but as I was running yesterday, I like didn't really go for a tempo yesterday, but I was off the CR and I was like, damn, we need like American CRs and yeah. we need European CRs and the European ones can be just real short.
Yeah.
Taking the tangents.
No, it's too.
But there is a level of cutting the switchbacks in Europe. I actually never do it in the US because in the US it all feels like cheating.
And it's also bad for in the US trail ethic, not good.
That's
true.
Actually, it's bad for like the way the trails are structured and erosion. But here it is slightly empowering.
It is very empowering. And what I've learned is if I want to get all the records on all the climbs around Chamonix,
you have to.
I'm going to become the ultimate trail cutting expert. Yeah. When you see me again, I'm going to be like, I'm going to have two knives in my hand and my thing is just going to be the trail cutter.
Well, it was really great to run with you today because you were like, you're kind of calling them out.
I've gotten good. I'm so pumped. Maybe a little bit of a controversial one. French people are nice.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I feel like it has to be really hard to be a Chamonix local right now.
Yeah.
You have people infiltrating your town, throwing up in random sewers, and they've all been so delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the US, we have a stereotype that generally French people don't love Americans.
I didn't know that stereotype. I was oblivious to that.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sure
I'm not helping that either. I'm like, lice hooches.
Yeah.
We're going to the town, lice hooches.
So I'm not sure if I help or hurt. You can be the decider here, Megan. So
definitely help.
I yell at the French people, "You are amazing." I don't try to say French because I don't want them to think I'm like patronizing them or whatever. But like, what do you think?
Yeah,
does it help or hurt?
I think it helps. Well, often what we've actually, I feel like we've been in a good groove. We say bonjour.
Yeah.
And then we say, "You are amazing." And I think they're responding well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Maybe
trail affirmations will be a new thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's going to be the trend. Yeah.
Planted a seed. No more bonjours only or mercis. We're going to start getting, "You are awesome."
Yes.
It's going to be so, so cool. I can't wait. There seems like there's a lack of fake sugar here. That's pretty cool. I think that one's interesting. Like just the food in general, there's a slightly different approach. It's a lot harder, I think, sometimes to get protein.
I agree. Yeah. Actually, my protein intake is really low and my carb intake is sky high.
Yes.
Like so high. But it's actually interesting. So I'm like usually gluten-free in the US. And when you come to France, if you're gluten-free, you're literally not going to get any calories.
Yeah.
But it hasn't bothered my stomach at all. I was doing it for my like autoimmune stuff. But then as soon as I became like gluten-free for a longer period of time, my stomach actually stopped tolerating it.
Yeah.
But here, it's great.
Do you think you're going to have gluten when we get home?
Yeah. It's a slippery slope. Is
that like it? Your autoimmune doctor said not to.
Well, the science isn't that good, like supporting autoimmune stuff. So, you know, gluten is too good. Until the science catches up and tells me it's like equivocally important, I'm just going to eat pizza.
Megan, this makes me more excited than a stallion.
Yeah.
Than one of those thick-ass horses. This means we can have pizza.
Like good pizza.
Like good pizza.
We've been having, like, here's the thing. Like, I feel like a lot of the like gluten-free stuff is heavily processed anyways.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I'm not totally sold on it.
Gluten-free pizza is like eating cheese on a saltine.
Yeah.
In the best of times.
I agree. That's a good hot take.
In the worst of times, it's like a soggy saltine.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the pizza over here, it is like you are just having something. It is the opposite of gluten-free. It is gluten expensive. It is just all pure gluten. And it makes me feel at home.
Oh, it's so good. We've been getting doughy pizza every night and it's been incredible.
It's so good. Okay. I think you have the last one there. What's that last one?
Oh yeah. Run tourism is almost as cool as running in the mountains.
Yeah.
So I studied abroad in college for a summer. I studied in Venice and I just love exploring new cities by running. And it's like such an efficient and fun way. And I'm like the opposite. I hate being a tourist. I love being a run tourist.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be really fun. Like, I feel like there's all these like hut trips through the Alps, but I feel like we should have a parallel one through cities.
Yeah.
I did a run through the French countryside and it was incredible. Besides the absolutely crazy French drivers.
Yeah.
They drive quite fast here, but it was amazing. And I was blissed out and I felt like I was in the mountains and it was a really nice day not to trash my quads.
Yeah. So maybe our final recommendation is come out here. Maybe not for race week. I think that that's a little overwhelming and maybe not the best time to experience the countryside.
Yeah.
But there's so many amazing towns all along this area. We've never taken the time to travel overseas outside of a race setting and some of Megan's experiences before we met. And it's taught us a lot. We've lived, you know, a year and a week. And that's good and bad. It's good because we're going to live forever at this rate. It's bad because we're a little bit ragged right now.
We're going to have extra wrinkles, but it's worth it.
Yeah. We're going to have wrinkles that tell stories.
Yes. Yeah.
And so...
And tell stories of these big ass mountains.
Yeah. Look into Vauxhall or Chamonix or Les Hooches or any of the towns along this trail, Courmayeur, any of them, and see if you can make a trip out sometime in the summer. I think it'd be really cool. And you'd learn a lot, not just about like yourself and running, racing and all that, but also about the world and what you like.
Well, this is a really cool reflection because I felt like I was kind of the one. I think your inertia wanted us to stay home.
Yeah.
And my inertia was like, we need to go to Chamonix.
Megan, if you told me that you were going to start eating gluten here and it would stick, I would have come here
many months ago.
I would have come here 12 times over. I would just do a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for that sweet, sweet gluten.
Oh yeah. It's totally worth it. But yeah, it was interesting because now I feel like you're so sold on it. So yeah. We're going to have to ride this travel wave and think about other foreign countries we can go to.
I think I'm sold on wherever I am is the problem.
That's true. Actually, you don't want to go home now.
No,
no.
But yeah. When we're home, I'm definitely not going to want to leave. Okay. So final little reflection on France. I wanted to sing a lyric from the Lonely Island's Mona Lisa song. Is that okay? Because I think it really describes some of our French experience.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
Mona Lisa, the original basic bitch, traveled thousands of miles to see your beautiful smile. Talk about a bait and switch. You ugly.
That was really good harmonizing.
Okay, was it okay that I did that?
Yeah, most of what you do on this is rap. Yeah. And you haven't really gone for like the harmony. And you went all in. I like it.
The reason I wanted to say that is that I think that like American take on France, it's obviously humorous, is kind of interesting, right? Because like it's making a joke that the Mona Lisa's ugly, which is like obviously not the point. But and every time we're making jokes about France, whether it's the food or the people or whatever, you know, I think it can partially come across like that. And it's the exact opposite, actually. Like we appreciate the world and these people so much and the broader community of trails, but also just existence. And my final takeaway from UTMB that's different from anything I've ever experienced in trails is going down Main Street or mm-hmm. being on the trails and seeing people from all over the world. You know, it's something like 200 countries represented out there, and thinking about, much like looking up at the sky, how small we actually, like the community can be when you're in little bubbles, wherever mm-hmm. you are, but how big it actually is and how loving and hopeful and exciting that is. And if you ever get bogged down in your little bubble, take so much hope in this broader world out there that's so full of love and courage and inspiration.
And stars.
And stars.
Always stars. But also, especially here in Chamonix, baguettes.
Yes.
I feel like stars unite the world. Baguettes unite Chamonix and everyone here in the moment.
Baguettes bring us together, baby.
They do.
Okay, we'll just do a listener corner to kick it off. Before we do, remember, guys, you need to take Athletic Greens. You never know when a random drug tester is going to show up at your door, and Athletic Greens is the best for that. But the main reason we wanted to mention it, when we're talking about travel, right now, I think it's the very last week to get 10 free travel packs, which has gotten me through this trip. I would have broken down in a pile on the side of the road without it. So that's like a $30 extra value if you go to drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. That's a way to support the podcast. Also a way to support your health.
When you were sick with your stomach implosion, you were taking really small sips of like Gatorade and ginger ale. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't have my Athletic Greens for the day. And I was like, David,
yeah.
Don't do it. Not a good time. But you believed so hard. It destroyed you to miss a day.
And that's how much I believe. I mean, you know, if the science on different types of adaptogens is quite good, but it's not well regulated and it's really hard to find what works and what doesn't. Athletic Greens is a way to just trust. It's certified, has things like ashwagandha in good amounts. We actually had a meeting with them and we're talking about how we can bring more of the science to the public, because there is science back there that's really well represented. It's just a little bit behind closed doors, but there's a reason that everybody takes this shit. Drinkag1.com/swap last week for a really, really special offer there.
Well, when I'm running down mountains, I think about my quads and I'm like burgers. And then I think about my soul and I'm like Athletic Greens. I need it both, and preferably in synergy.
Perfect. Okay. Listener corner real quick before we go. Long email alert. I just wanted to thank you guys for being awesome and always encouraging people to shoot their shot. You inspired me to shoot my shot last year and run a marathon, which was awesome. But recently I've decided to shoot my shot and change careers. I had to take a big test, which I missed by 5 points. I was so disappointed. But I thought, don't give up. Keep working and keep shooting your shot. I took the test yesterday again and passed.
Oh, heck yes.
You guys are inspiring on so many levels. Yeah, just wanted to say how cool that is, you know, and gets back to our discussion of failure.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, races are not tests,
yeah.
But I feel like so often similar things happen in races. Just get back on the starting line. Yeah.
And I made a comment earlier that running and progressing in running is essentially being gifted the opportunity to fail on progressively bigger stages. And what I was thinking about as like a corollary to that is that the quote failure or the stage that you're on, mm-hmm. feels the same no matter where you're at.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
For someone out there that is doing their very first run or has started like a month ago, know that your journey is just as important as Jim's winning mm-hmm. UTMB. Yeah, we're going to talk about his just because people care a lot and they click on our podcast and it's interesting and we love Jim. But, you know, your journey matters just as much, and your lows feel so low, just like the, you know, the pros do, but your highs can be so high, and just ride that wave and see where this journey takes you, because I think it's going to the stars.
Ride the wave with a baguette.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like Pogacar is famous for like biking around with a baguette in the back of his bike pocket.
Yeah.
Hold, surf the wave with it. Is it makes life a whole lot better.
Is that a baguette in your pocket? Mm. Are you just happy to hear the SWAT podcast? We love you all.
Woohoo.
Huzzah.